I asked this at the beginning of the service, but a number of people, probably some of you, have had the experience of going into a strange church, sitting down, only to find out that you're sitting in the assigned seat of Aunt Sally, whose mother sat there, whose grandmother sat there, whose great-grandmother sat there, whose great-great-grandmother owned that pew, because you could buy pews then, and it's still hers. And if you don't believe it, she'll tell you, right? Although there may be many other spaces around, that is her seat. It's probably about as close as we can get to understanding what Jesus is talking about in this story when he's instructing his disciples about the proper etiquette of attending a wedding banquet. Several years ago, R. Harold Hips, friend of mine for many years and a longtime member here, died. Now, R. had been an important person among Christian educators. He had been the executive director of the Christian Educators Fellowship for many years. He had conducted a number of national events, and I had known him since the 70s when he came to speak at the seminary I was attending, and was delighted when I found out that he was a member here and that I was being assigned here. What I didn't learn until I got here is that R. Harold Hips was actually a leprechaun. It's true. He was about this tall, and on St. Patrick's Day, his true self showed because he would dress like a leprechaun. But he was just this kind of magical personality who was full of mischief and full of fun, and that never went away. In fact, even as we were preparing for his death, as we were preparing for his memorial service, he called me to his house, and we were lining out what he wanted, and it was going to be the way R wanted it, let me tell you. So he was sending his family members scurrying for this, that, and the other, and he said, I have a robe that you are going to wear in the service. He said, I'm the only person who's ever worn it. Now, you have to understand, R's about this tall. I said, R, if you can wear that robe, there is no way in the world it's going to fit me. He said, no, go get it, go get it, go get it and try it on. He made me try it on at that time. And the crazy thing is, I tried it on, and it fit. I've worn it occasionally in worship here. I told you he was a leprechaun. I don't know what kind of magic he used, but it fit him, and it also fit me. He was always loving to fun with people and joke with people. I remember he used to come out my door, and he would frequently cut out cartoons from The New Yorker and hand me a cartoon in an envelope on the way out. And one we still have up in the kitchen. It's God watching a television, and several angels are behind God, and God is saying, hey, wait, I don't have time for all this famine and warfare and stuff. I got to help this basketball player sink this foul shot. That was our sense of humor. Well, at his memorial service, we had a time when anyone could share a story about R. And Bishop Roy Clark was here. Bishop Clark, both of these men were heroes of mine. Both of these men were the kind of people I want to be when I grow up. And so Bishop Clark, in his wheelchair, rolls over to the microphone. We give him the microphone, and he tells this story. One day, he and his wife come into church, and R is sitting in the seat where they usually sit, probably by design. And he walks over to him, and he said, R, you're sitting in my seat. And R looked up at him and said, Bishop, there are lots of empty seats around here for you. You're welcome to any one of them. And he didn't move. Roy Clark thought that was incredibly funny. He loved that. It's interesting that in this story that Jesus is telling, unless you understand the pecking order of table fellowship and parties, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Because you see, in the ancient Middle East, whether it was a simple dinner or whether it was a wedding banquet, there was a host, and whoever sat to the right of the host was in the seat of honor. And it went from there in the pecking order as to the importance of the people attending. And if you were to sit in a place that didn't match your place in the pecking order, it would have been a shameful thing. Okay? And I don't mean just shameful to you. It would be shameful to the host. It would be shameful to the person who was supposed to sit there, who was ahead of you in the order of importance. It would be a shameful thing for your whole family if you chose that. In an honor and shame culture, these are really, really sometimes life and death issues. Now, I have never been to a state dinner, but I imagine still in this time when you go to a state dinner and dignitaries from various countries are there, that there is a certain order of importance in which they're seated. Now, this is me just imagining. That, too, may be about as close as we can get to what Jesus is describing. But what he observes as he sits at this banquet is that people are vying for that spot of honor, that high place. And so he offers a little advice on etiquette. Now, Jesus is no Emily Post, okay? He is not going to tell you what the culture expects. In fact, he's probably going to tell you the opposite of what the culture expects. So he says, when you come to a dinner party, don't try to vie for the seat of honor. Sit down in the last place, the place that has the least honor attached to it. Because if you sit in that seat of honor and somebody more important than you comes in, the host is going to come and ask you to move. And you will have dishonored yourself, the host, the person who's sitting there, and your family. And you will leave in dishonor and take the last place. But if you sit in the last place, there is the possibility that the host will come and say, here, come up and sit closer to me. The word for what he's talking about is humility. And you have to understand, humility was not a virtue in the ancient world. In fact, there is an Australian philosopher named John Dixon, wrote a book several years ago called Humilitas, about humility and how it functions today, who argues that until the time of Jesus, humility had never been a virtue, certainly not in Roman culture. And even in Jewish culture. In Roman culture, if you had done something important, you wanted everybody to know about it. You'd take out ads in the paper. You'd put commercials on television. You would trumpet your successes. You would ride down the street and have people shouting about all the great things you had done. Humility was associated with humiliation and was the opposite of a virtue until Jesus comes along. And in Jesus, we see someone who tells his followers and others, because they're not all his followers at that banquet, don't trumpet your accomplishments. Don't take that seat of honor. Take the last place. Because you see, those who exalt themselves will be humbled. And those who humble themselves will be exalted. The last shall be first, and the first shall be last. It's that same reversal that you hear his mother sing about in that beautiful song, the Magnificat, that we sing every Advent. The mighty shall be brought low, and the low shall be lifted up. The full shall be empty, and the empty shall be full. Jesus knew that he was going against the cultural grain when he suggested that we shouldn't vie for the place of honor, but should choose the last place. Because after all, God sees us wherever we sit, and it is God who ultimately gives us our self-esteem and self-worth, not what other people think, not where society ranks us, not by any titles that we're given. Now, that would have been enough if Jesus had just offered advice to the guests. But he's not going to stop there, okay? He starts offering advice to the host. Don't you love it when you invite somebody to a party and they start lecturing you about how you could have done the party better? He was kind of a party pooper in this instance, right? So he says to the host, when you have a party like this, don't invite your family members. What? You know what my family members were going to say if I have a party and don't invite them? Don't invite your friends, your close friends, who will say, well, they invited us to that party, I guess we'll have to invite them to this party. Well, they gave me that bright red tie for Christmas, I guess I ought to get them something. That quid pro quo that is so much a part of our lives, that this for that. Well, I guess they did this for us, I guess we'll have to do that for them. Jesus undercuts that entirely. This is not an exchange of goods he's talking about. This is not a commercial exchange at all. Jesus says, when you have a party, go out and invite the people who can never pay you back. Go out and invite those people. Stand with those people who are pushed to the margins. Stand with and be a voice for those people who have no voice, who have no power. You see what he's saying? Don't just take the last seat when you come, but when you have a party, go out and get those who are already in the last seat, who are already forced to be in the last seat, who no one else will invite to a party because they can't invite them back. What do you think we're doing when we partner with the Campus for Human Development and invite guests in here every Wednesday night through the cold weather for Room in the Inn? That's what we're doing. What do you think we're doing on Sunday night when we work with the Oasis Center and Launchpad and invite LGBTQ young people who are homeless in to our building so they can have a place to stay? What do you think we're doing when every Monday we invite those who are giving care to others, family members, and others who are struggling with dementia and memory loss for Sunny Day? What do you think we're doing? We're doing exactly what Jesus told us to do. Those folks can never invite us back and do the same thing for us. That's not ever expected. Religion is not a quid pro quo. It is not, you do this for me, I'll do that for you. It is an expression of love that expects nothing in return, except perhaps that you pass that love along when you have a chance. Jesus not only talked about that, he embodied it. He took the lowest place. It says in Philippians, he did not consider equality with God a thing to be held on to, but came as a slave. That's what the word means. It doesn't mean servant, all that's how it's translated, as a slave. Accepting death, even death on a cross. The last seat in culture is death on a cross. You don't get any lower. And even as he hangs there, he offers forgiveness to the people who put him there. He doesn't just talk the talk. Oh no, he walks to that last place to show us what it's like, what it requires. And then he allows us to follow in that way, sometimes in very simple ways, inviting folks into the building who could never invite us to their homes because they have no home. Inviting people to eat with us who could never invite us because they don't have sufficient food for themselves, much less for us. We experience it even in the acts of kindness that we share with each other. I want to close with a story that to me is a very sweet story, but it's also a very sad story for me, a sad recollection. When I was appointed to come here, but before I was actually here officially, I knew I was coming, but I was going to begin February 1st, I snuck into the candle lighting service during Advent. Marvelous service. Oh, it's a beautiful service. At the end of it, there are candles lit all over the sanctuary. It is absolutely stunning. And now that I've served here for a number of years, at the end of every service, I'm just glad that nobody combusted during the service. A successful candle lighting service is where nobody caught fire. So if you want to wonder what I'm thinking when I'm up here, that's what I'm thinking. Oh, please, God, don't let anybody catch fire. But I wasn't thinking that then because I wasn't supposed to be in charge. I was just a person holding a candle. I didn't notice how things went. I didn't notice how it was organized. I was just experiencing the delight of that service. So the next year, I'm here, and I get assigned the job of organizing the youth so that they can go down this middle row, this middle aisle, and light the candle of the person sitting closest to the middle aisle so they can light the candle of the person next to them, and they can light the candle of the person next to them, and so on and so forth. And I had no idea what I was doing. Well, I mean, after all, I'm senior pastor. I'm supposed to know what I'm doing, right? So I come in here kind of acting like I know what I'm doing. And it becomes pretty evident pretty quickly that I don't have a clue. So what do you do when that happens? Well, if you're smart, and I'm usually not this smart, you just admit to it. I said, hey, I don't know what I'm doing. And a beautiful young blonde girl, she was a girl then, Margaret Lowe, who died almost a year ago now when a vessel burst in her brain, a senior at the University of Virginia. Beautiful Margaret Lowe said, oh, we know how to do this. And that teenager, along with her friends, organized the whole thing. I just stood and watched in amazement as she welcomed me, offered this kind of hospitality to someone who was supposed to be a kind of first seat person who had no idea what he was doing. And I told her and her friends, you know, you guys are going to, when you go to college, you're going to have to come back from college to do this, right? You know this, right? For several years, they were the ones who organized that and made that work. When you receive that kind of welcome and hospitality, especially when you're someone who's supposed to be in charge, you're supposed to know what you're doing, and you realize you really don't, it's a very powerful thing. We offer that to each other as we offer welcome. Sometimes we have to step out of knowing what we're doing. Sometimes we have to step out of being in charge. Sometimes we have to step away from the idea that we are supposed to have the seat of honor and let someone else show us the way. Margaret showed me the way. And I am grateful and will always be grateful. So what does Jesus teach us? He teaches us that humility is not humiliation. It's not self-denigration. It is knowing that you're important because you're a child of God, not because of any titles, not because of any seat of honor, not because of any special knowledge. And as children of God, we reach out to each other. And we are the ones who invite each other to come forward, to come up, to come into this community. We are the ones who say, oh, I know how to do that. Let me help you. We are the ones who follow the example of true humility, which, of course, is the example of Jesus Christ. Thanks be to God.